Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the last week of April 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Tribcast substitute-in-chief Reeve Hamilton.
Hello.
Hello. Today our topics are going to be the Arizona immigration law and how that affects Texas or might affect Texas. What's going on in Waco? Ross's excellent adventure in Waco. The debate over debates and Rick Perry shooting a coyote, apparently. Let's start with Reeve and the Arizona immigration law.
Okay. As anyone who follows the news knows, Arizona passed a law this week. Governor Jan Brewer signed it into law. It basically says that it's a crime to be in Arizona illegally, and that police officers are authorized to check the immigration status of anyone they suspect might be in the state illegally. I mean, there's been a huge backlash. There are going to be protests in every major Texas city, and I'm sure there are protests in other states, too.
There are protests planned already in Dallas, or there was a rally, I should say, that was planned already for Dallas on Monday. Now there's also one in San Antonio Monday, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be one in Austin, too, this weekend.
But it's turned into not just a rally in favor of immigration reform, but a protest against Arizona.
Right.
Does this mark the first time a state has really stepped in to say that law enforcement can check immigration status? Because previously, I mean, as it is in Texas, you know, there's a big difference between what the federal law is and what local law enforcement can do.
It's the opposite of the sanctuary city movement. And the idea with the sanctuary cities, we're going to hear a lot about this in this governor's campaign, by the way, but the idea in the sanctuary city thing was that police basically didn't ask. So they would pull somebody over, maybe they would suspect, maybe they would have cause to believe they were illegal immigrants, but they just wouldn't ask. And that was sort of the designation of a sanctuary city. Sometimes that was an unstated policy, as apparently it was in Houston. Sometimes it was a stated policy, as it was in some other places. But this is the opposite of that, where they're encouraging the police not only to ask, don't just leave this alone. We want you to proactively look for illegal immigrants. And one of the issue in Arizona, and I think the issue as this goes to court, is going to be whether it should be based on suspicion that someone might be an illegal immigrant or based on probable cause.
So it's racial profiling. That's the first question.
Right. It's hard to imagine the criticism is that
it's racial profiling, right. And there's no real argument against that other than uh-uh.
And anytime the argument in response to this is, but they're not only stopping Hispanics.
Right.
This is not a good place to be. And I would also point out that an additional little tidbit in this law is, not only are the police told they've got to stop people if they suspect they're not there legally, but it gives citizens, if I understand this correctly, the right to sue the police for not enforcing the law, which is like, I had to read those words several times. And I think what's been really wonderful about this is that there's a policy question and a politics question. That's why we exist here at the Tribune, is to look at the convergence and divergence of those things. The policy part is fascinating. The politics part is more fascinating. As John Stewart pointed out the other night, how conservative is this law? Even Tom Tancredo has disowned it. As he said, you know, Tom Tancredo, the person who Mexican families invoke to scare their children into behaving well, even he is the one who is Karl Rove, Jeb Bush, go down the list of people who have disowned this law effectively. I mean, it is, from a political standpoint, so interesting to see
other places,
how people are running screaming from it.
Right.
Other places have already sort of taken even further steps. I mean, Governor Schwarzenegger in California asked for a list of companies that do business in Arizona.
Right.
So there might be some serious ramifications.
Well, there's a boycott that is organized right now on social media, for instance. You will encounter people suggesting, I think that the baseball All-Star game is in Arizona this year. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boycott the baseball All-Star game. Boycott companies that advertise or do business with Arizona media. It really is...
It's a problem.
It's something. It really is.
Start with this immigration problem and the conservatives, and I won't just say Republicans because conservatives, other conservatives are here too.
Sure.
Are saying the United States ought to be more diligent about its immigration laws, either because of jobs, because of crime, because of whatever. And here a state has stepped into it. And it's one of those things where it's like warmer, 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 too hot. And the Republicans are now in a position in particular where Arizona has gone so far that they've made this issue dangerous for people who would otherwise be talking about it all the time in this election cycle.
And when you ask a politician where he or she stands on this issue, if no answer is forthcoming, that's not a good answer. Because if you, not answering how you feel about this issue is tantamount to endorsing it. So I emailed Mark Minor the other day, Governor Perry's spokesman, and said, does the governor have a position on the Arizona law? And he emailed back, not that I know of, or has he made a public statement? Not that I know of. Well, I noticed that he gave an interview to a Fox station in Houston, I believe yesterday, in which he seemed to not like it, but he didn't actually come out as strongly as Jeb Bush or others have done and said, I don't like it. He's handling it carefully. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how he plays that because, you know, this is the same day that Governor Perry's campaign started a Twitter feed for the campaign in Spanish.
Right.
The governor's campaign is absolutely out there trying to appeal to Hispanic voters. He's going to need to have a position on this that the Hispanic community at least understands whether or not the Hispanic community agrees with it.
And right. In the general election postmortem that the Perry team gave in 2006, they actually considered it a bragging point how well Perry did along the border and among Hispanics. You know, he hasn't been in a general election since then, but I assume that he still wants to be able to capture a lot of, you know, votes in that community, if possible.
It's important. I mean, you know, Perry has floated around. We've talked about this a million times. Perry's numbers float around 50%. 48%, 49%, 51%, 52%. They float around this. You can't give votes away. And, you know, if you jump into the Wayback Machine here and look at what George Bush did when he got elected against Ann Richards, Pete Wilson in California, then the governor, went too far on immigration and got flushed out of office. George Bush, you know, basically had a more open arms approach to Hispanics, to immigration, to the, you know, visited places on the border Republicans never visited before and did really well with Hispanics,
right.
And it boosted his numbers. All the Texas Republicans learned the lesson. I think Perry certainly did.
It gets back to the Victor Carrillo problem. I mean,
right.
It's,
it does.
You know, you have the governor saying correctly, I appointed the first two Hispanic Supreme Court justices, for instance.
Right.
But the first one got defeated as his appointed railroad commissioner. Victor Carrillo got defeated. There continues to be this question of does the Republican Party of Texas have a problem with the Hispanic community, and a question that some have an answer for and some people say not clear. But, you know, there was a poll out today that showed that Jan Brewer is now behind her Democratic opponent in the polls in Arizona. She's up for election. And she is the woman who, as lieutenant governor, I believe, succeeded Janet Napolitano when she was brought into the Obama administration as Homeland Secretary. So she is now sitting for election herself for the first time. And the Democrat running now is ahead by a few points in the polls. I mean, I think there's a real question as to what the backlash is going to mean, again, not just from a policy standpoint, but from a political standpoint.
Right. We have a little test here. And, you know, I don't know if Elise is going to let me transition yet, but if you were to put this question before three Republicans at the McLennan County Republican Women's Club, the answers that you get are interesting. Darren Yancey, this is the special election for Senate to succeed Kip Averett. Darren Yancey.
Does that work as a transition?
I was going to say, why don't we just stay in McLennan County?
That okay? Yeah. Darren Yancey jumps up and says, I like the Arizona law except for this probable cause argument. He clearly read the whole law, you know, really went into it. This is the guy that Kip Averett beat in the primary.
Burleson insurance agent.
Right. And then
Tea Party guy, nullification
right,
guy.
Right, right.
And Averett still beat him.
Right. And then, yeah, and Averett
beat him with two hands tied behind him.
Yeah, Averett never got up. You know, I'm staying here on the couch. I'll get 60%. He got 60%. Then Brian Birdwell stands up and says, well, the problem here is that the United States is not enforcing its immigration laws. And I myself, Brian Birdwell was a victim of the 9/11 plane crash at the Pentagon and said, you know, I myself am evidence of what happens when, you know, we don't know who's running around in our country. He gets a big applause line. Sibley stands up. David Sibley, the former senator also running in this race, stands up and says, you know, I don't think we should do the Arizona law, but we clearly have a problem with the federal government not enforcing its immigration law. So there's, you know, the Republicans are trying to find the spot here that's safe to land in, that's warm but not too hot.
And decides that it wants the federal government involved in our lives.
Right.
In this instance, but not in other instances.
Right.
I think it is worth noting that whoever wins will probably get the chance to vote or potentially vote on the issue because State Representative Leo Bourbon is going to be filing a law similar to the one in Arizona, which I mean, he's done bills like that before.
I'm certain we'll have three or four bills filed. The question is, you know, they've previously been stuck in committee. David Swinford had the committee. He's leaving the legislature this time. But these bills, these harsher immigration bills, or more stringent, however you want to phrase it, more stringent immigration bills have come before. They've been filed in the Texas legislature before, but have never gotten out of committee and to the full House or to the full Senate. And the question is, I guess depending on what happens in this Arizona election, to some extent, and how this rolls out, what they'll be doing in a year.
I think very interestingly, John McCain, formerly a maverick, formerly too moderate for much of the Republican Party nationally, is for this law. You saw who came out against this law today, Meghan McCain, daughter of John McCain. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, again, I come back to the politics of this trumping the policy. We know what the policy is.
Well, John McCain's
politics of it are really interesting.
John McCain's in this funny box, and Arizona really is a great petri dish for this. John McCain and Ted Kennedy wrote the last big change in the immigration laws, and McCain's answering to his detriment for that in the Republican primary out there.
But he's also running against a guy who is quite significantly to the right of him, J.D. Hayworth, the talk show host and former U.S. representative. And McCain is invariably protecting his rightward flank, at least partly as a motivation for this. I'm not suggesting he doesn't actually believe that this is a good law, but again, politics. So I expect that the White campaign will do a version of what the Perry campaign has done, and put out press releases that begin on day two of Rick Perry refusing to answer whether he supports the Arizona immigration law, comma. Right? I mean, you could see very easily that the White campaign could try to take this issue and turn it against the governor and say, we're going to force you to come out and say, do you support this or don't you? It's one of those things that has the potential to be beneficial to the Democrats in a year in which not much has been.
Right, on the theory that if the Hispanic population generally tends to be more, well, they are more Democratic than Republican, and if you get them up and voting, then it benefits the Democrat. I expect them to exploit it.
Any quick note, Ross, on anything else on Sibley and what you found in Waco?
It's such a weird election. You know, It's a special election on May 8th, and you know, one of the weird things about this is it's 10 counties in Central Texas. Waco's there, Burleson's there, Ellis is there, and everything. Johnson County. You know, one of the things that's interesting up there is that a lot of the counties don't have consolidated elections. So if you were going to vote in Waco on May 8th for Senate, and you wanted to vote for mayor, and you wanted to vote for school board, you've got to find three different places. You're going to need a chauffeur. Yeah. So the question all those guys have is, you talk to them and they say, well, we're blocking and tackling, we're doing this, we're doing that, you know, we're doing this and that and that and that. And you finally get down to who's going to vote, and they go, I don't have any idea. And you can tell that it's keeping them up at night. They don't know how this is going to go.
I loved your story for a couple reasons, but my favorite part of it was your acknowledgement that David Sibley, being a lawmaker turned lobbyist, is the wrong kind of hyphenate.
Right.
This year.
Right.
Right. It's not. This is not a year to be someone who left the legislature and went into the lobby, because that's exactly the kind of person being targeted by the angries.
Right. Very popular guy when he left office. You know, former mayor of Waco. He was a prosecutor there. He used to be a dentist. Lost use of one of his hands, so he went to law school. And you know, I mean, he's a great story. And now he's up there as you say. He's been a lobbyist, and they're looking at every lobby client he's ever had. It turns out that lobbyists give money to people in both parties. Did you know that?
I had no idea that lobbyists hedge their bets.
Apparently he does that. And when you go in front of a Republican audience and they say, did you in fact give to those Democrats? Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Awkward.
All they hear is guilty. Guilty with an explanation is not sufficient. They just hear that. And then the other thing is, George W. Bush did a fundraiser for Sibley, or did an event for Sibley. Uh-huh. That is also not necessarily a great thing.
They did this very smart thing. They did two things with this. They raised $120,000 for a special election, which is something, right?
Right.
And they invited all of these. There's this weird thing that happens. When Kip Everett withdraws his name from the ballot, because as we said, he won the nomination. When he withdraws his name, the voters don't get to replace him. The 10 Republican county chairs get to replace him. So you go to 10 people and you say, I need 6 of you to vote for me, put me on the ballot in November so I can go to office. So Sibley has this fundraiser. George Bush and Laura Bush are there to help raise money and to shake hands with 10 very important voters who are these county chairs. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing. But you're right. George Bush isn't necessarily the right guy at this time.
Now, you're our Tea Party guy, Reeve, in that you've written about the Tea Party quite a lot. You covered the Mabry Jackson-Van Taylor race, both the primary and then the runoff. And I'm wondering the degree to which Brian Birdwell's role in this race is going to be to determine the outcome of it. Because if it has been Yancey against Sibley, that's one kind of thing. But Birdwell gives the people who are hostile to Sibley for the reasons we said, but don't want to support Burleson, who seems kind of out there. I mean, I don't want to support Yancey, yes, pardon me, who seems kind of out there. They give Birdwell gives them another option. And he, like Van Taylor, He's a guy who is probably of but not from the Tea Party nullification side of the party, and he's a veteran. He kind of has this quality to him that is different and maybe ultimately
right.
helps him.
It's worth noting that in the HD 66 race with Van Taylor and Mabry Jackson, Van Taylor, there was a third, more Tea Party enthusiast,
Yancey-like guy,
and yeah. he lost in the primary, and then Van Taylor got his supporters and formed a coalition that won the runoff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that could happen again. It's hard. I think it's easier to see that path than it is to see Yancey's path from.
Yancey's got, Yancey would be in a, if you're running Yancey's campaign, Birdwell's bad news.
People that
don't want to vote for Sibley for all the reasons we've talked about would go to him. The Democrat isn't making much noise in this race because there's not many Democratic votes, and frankly, they're not excited. They don't have a fight. The Republicans have the fight, so the draw is going to be from the Republican side.
Well, you remember the argument against having a Democrat in this race was that if a Democrat got into this race and the Democrat was too competitive, the Republicans would feel a need to really marshal their efforts, and then they began to worry about Chet Edwards in November.
One of the guys
that it would spill upward.
One of the guys who's making the rounds at these events, like the ones I went to yesterday, is this fella named Bill Flores. You've heard of him.
I have heard of him.
He's running against Chet Edwards, and he wants to be everywhere where the Republicans are, and already working this deal. So, game on.
It's really pretty great. I have one procedural question before we go on, Elise, which is there a runoff provision in a special election?
There is.
So if this happens on May 8th,
right,
and somebody doesn't get 50%, we could be looking at a straight up Sibley versus Birdwell, Sibley versus Yancey, Birdwell versus Yancey.
Or Sibley versus Avent. I mean, you could.
Oh, right, because the could, Democrat, because this is like an all-in deal.
It's an all-in deal. So the Democrats' hope here is that the Republicans split the Republican vote enough that the second finisher is the Democrat. So could be anybody.
And then we still have the issue of who's going to be in the general election.
Right. And then all they get out of this special election is they get to keep the seat warm until January. And presumably you have a leg up when you go to these 10 county chairs and say, listen, I want to be the guy on the ballot. Let me throw in one more thing, just for laughs. If Averett doesn't like the outcome of the special election, he's not required to quit the ballot. He can stay on the ballot. He could stay on the ballot in November. Yeah. Be the nominee, he could then quit and set up another special election.
In other words, if Yancey were to win this special,
right,
Averett could decide, I have to take one for the team.
Right, spin
and,
it.
You know, serve in. Another term just to defeat Yancey, or he could maybe beat Yancey and then quit after that.
There's no beating Yancey. If Averett doesn't leave, Yancey doesn't get on, Averett could win this election in November. I could write soaps, right? Averett could win this election in November, refuse to be seated, setting up a special election in which David Sibley, Gail Avent, Brian Birdwell, Darren Yancey, and their dogs could all run.
And Elise will be back here talking about it.
Yeah,
then,
I bet that's right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you've been observing these things longer than I have. I assume this is pretty unique, this situation.
Yeah, kind of. But, the ball always bounces funny in Texas politics. That's what makes it fun. I mean, that's why I've been doing it this long. There's always some other weird, strange way to do it. And, often it comes from Waco, I'll just say.
Just in the interest of time, I'll marry the final two topics, which are Perry is refusing to debate or talk about debates with White until White releases more of his income tax returns. And apparently, according to the Associated Press, he says that he shot a coyote in order to protect the safety of his Labrador puppy, Bella's puppy. Bella, his lab, had a bunch of puppies, I guess, over Christmas, around Christmas, and he's watching out for them.
Well, now we know what it takes for the governor to engage you.
Oh, right? Yes, I've seen all
Maybe
of them.
Bill White should menace his puppy. I want to just stay on the debate thing, which is to say that this is a false issue. It allows the Perry campaign to direct attention yet again to their irritation at White's not – in fact, their glee rather than irritation.
Right. Tax return.
White not releasing his tax returns. There are going to be debates. There's going to be at least debates singular. Hopefully there will be debates plural. All of us in the press will pull together, I'm sure, to harangue to get multiple debates. Debates don't matter until they do, right? We can always go back and go, debates don't – well, Carol Keaton Strayhorn's not knowing who the president of Mexico was,
right,
and Kinky Friedman's view of African-American relations as, filtered through his friend from Atlanta in the last gubernatorial general election debate, it was consequential.
It matters.
Now, what didn't matter was Gary Morrow wiping the floor with George W. Bush in 1998 in that debate in El Paso on Friday night during football season that nobody saw. That didn't matter.
Right.
But the debate between Bush and Richards, where Bush didn't drool on himself at the Anatole, I think it was, right
in Dallas, Anatole, right?
Mattered. A debate will matter. When the two of them are up on stage together, it invariably does matter.
Right.
Both for what happens and what doesn't happen. And in the end, they're going to debate.
They'll end up there.
They've got to debate.
But Perry is going to take every advantage. And as you say, with glee, I mean, this is a gift. They get to spend all summer going, tax return, tax return, tax return, tax return.
Yeah.
That's a win.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the coyote thing, it sure played, which is what I care about.
Is that not a transition handed to you from God?
Meanwhile, on the coyote issue.
Yeah. the greatest.
Well, I guess, you know, it plays into this whole Perry rugged Texas governor myth, right? It's
right.
Pretty effective. For
well,
him.
I was going to say, the story, basically, he shot a coyote 2 months ago. It came out Tuesday this week. This plays right into his whole sort of Rick Perry as Chuck Norris kind of theme. And you see that on Twitter. There's a fake Twitter account called Rick Perry Facts that sort of lays up. It picks up this Chuck Norris humor and just gives you regular updates. There's a similar one that's Bill White Facts. An example of theirs, I think, is last night Bill White was up late crunching numbers. Numbers never had it so hard. So he's not quite the Chuck Norris. But I noticed that
Chuck Norris can divide by zero.
Right. Right. But on the Rick Perry Facts, the day before this story came out, the Rick Perry fact for the day was Rick Perry killed a crocodile that was about to eat an innocent puppy using only his eyelids.
Now, this is on Monday.
Right.
This is the day before Jim Fortuno gets the coyote scoop.
Right. So it's life imitating Twitter, I guess.
Well, or another piece of evidence that somebody writing Rick Perry Facts has some inside information.
Ooh, maybe right? Rick Perry Facts
maybe
is the
Rick
same
Perry
guy
Facts
as
and Rick Perry
fake
the
Elise's Boo, you know, the not Matt McCoviak site, actually. I'm not going to let that go, Elise. I just want you to know
Oh,
that.
Yay, it's back.
Yeah. I think we have to give... With the understanding that none of us was present for the coyote slaying, none of us has benefited in our yards from the coyote mulch that the governor created. With that understanding...
I understand coyote mulch keeps deer away.
I have no knowledge of this. With that understanding, the story sets up novelistically, cinematically, operatically, as told by the governor, almost too perfectly. Can we acknowledge? It's almost too perfect.
Yeah, it's...
The quotes... are almost too perfect. I mean, the governor sounds like the governor. There's no question about that.
It's a Forrest Gump moment. It's like, you know, really that happened to you? You bought stock in
you
a fruit
You read it and you go, no. He carries a concealed handgun when he's jogging?
Yeah, where does he carry that?
Well, you guys, Elise and Reeve, I'll acknowledge that you made the Plaxico Burress reference come to life earlier today, which hadn't occurred to me, but... Yeah, where exactly does he carry the handgun when he's jogging?
Right.
I have enough problem carrying my iPod. What's he doing? I mean, come on.
And we've run into Rick Perry on the trail many times. He always runs with like three or four other security.
And he had no security on this time. It was someplace where he was out by himself, you know, with his puppy. And his laser-sighted concealed handgun.
Right. And the Houston Chronicle noted that if he's within the Austin city limits, then he's got a $500 fine facing him for discharging a firearm.
Try and collect.
Yeah.
There's my response on that.
Good luck to the cop who...
But I have to say, you know, Rick Perry can... I will give the governor, without facetiousness or anything else, a lot of credit. The governor's the myth of the governor, which is not to say that it's not real, but just kind of the larger-than-life aspects of Governor Perry. The guy just plays that card to a fare-thee-well. The guy is just something. I mean, the image that he has created for himself, the image that he inhabits every inch of, and of course, the national press.
This is why all of his opponents, all of these years, have said he is the luckiest guy in politics. These things just happen.
He's also really good at.
Oh, I agree.
Working that thing. Yeah. You know, the Washington Post ran this story. Huffington Post ran this story. All the national press is just eating it up. The Huffington Post posted the Perry Coyote story from Jim Fortuno at AP, who let's give acknowledged credit to, you know, great story.
Yeah, great story.
They published the thing at 5 of 8 last night. In less than 3 hours, the Huffington Post had more than 1,000 comments on their reprinting of this story. This thing is like instantly rises to the status of legend.
All the guy needs is a theme song.
True or not, Chuck Norrisy or not, whatever else, got to give the guy credit. I mean, it's, you know, here we are talking about it. It's pretty amazing. What's Bill White going to do? What's he going to kill, and with what weapon? That's maybe that's
numbers.
Should be a contest.
He's going to kill some numbers.
Crunch the numbers.
We should maybe have a contest. You know, that the tell us what you think Bill White should kill, and with what weapon, and you will win a Texas Tribune hat if you give us the best answer.
A bad math problem will sneak right. up on him, and he will act.
And he will slay it with an errant stalk of asparagus or something. What exactly is it? It's good stuff, Elise, isn't it?
Why don't we end the podcast on Evan's praise of Governor Rick Perry?
Take a picture.
If you have any questions or comments for us, you can email podcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Ross, Evan, and Reeve, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.